Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Man Podcast. This is episode 451, and today I'm having a little chat with Jim Hyde, who runs Rawhide Adventures and Training. And now he's here to tell us all about what they do and their tours and a bunch of other stuff. But first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Man Podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to ScorpionUSA.com. And Wild Ass Seats. You can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, get on over to wild-ass.com and tell the real Craig Johnson that the Motorcycle Men Podcast sent you over to get a cushion. And of course, as always, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Now, everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding gear, riding jeans, California riding shirt. This stuff is wonderful, and we can't tell you how great they are. I wear them for every ride and won't ride without them. Now, your safety is worth it, so get on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. All right, now, time for that little interview with Jim. All right, boys and girls, and here we are once again in the V-Twin Cafe in the corner booth. Joining me today, all the way from, and where are you, Jim?
A little town called Castaic, California.
From the left coast. We have, as in right and left, as the right side of the United States, left side of the United States, and nothing political by at any means whatsoever. From the West Coast, we have Jim Hyde from Rawhide Adventures and Training. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Ted. I appreciate you. I appreciate the invitation.
I'm glad you can make it, you know, and I don't remember where I don't remember where I saw it. I was doing a BDR interview, and then I saw you guys on there, and I said, hey, let me reach out, and here we are. Why don't you tell us who you are, your motorcycle self, and what you do?
Wow. Okay. Well, Jim Hyde, born and raised here in Southern California, so I'm a bit of an anomaly because California seems to be the place where people who've messed their lives up in other parts of the country migrate to. That's a joke, internal joke. There's very few of us natives. There's a whole lot of imports.
Really? No kidding. Anyway,
yeah. There's a huge percentage of folks have come out here mostly for the weather, to be honest.
I can see that.
We can ride 12 months of the year here in California. Yeah. There's really no winter.
Let me ask you this. Speaking of what's the temperature right now where you are?
So right now it's sunny and blue skies, probably 72-73 degrees.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I wish. We've had a few days like that in the past week, but not now.
Yeah. So where are you located?
I'm in North Carolina, along the coast.
All
right. So right now we're at like 58 degrees and it's overcast.
Waiting for Melissa to push some rain your way?
No, it's not going to come near us. All right. It's just, it's that time of year.
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, back on topic. So Rawhide Adventures. We've been in business for, we're going into our 23rd year.
Really? Oh, good.
Yep. February, upcoming February, it'll be 23 years of doing adventure-related things. Based in Southern California, we have a big facility. We've got a couple thousand acres that we run our operation on. Just north of Los Angeles. And we are, at this point, the only company that BMW has partnered with for a training center in North America.
Wow. So, the only one. So BMW picked you guys and said, you're it.
Yeah, there's a story right there. We've been a partner with them since 2009.
Oh, no kidding. Now, how did that partnership come about?
The interesting part for Rawhide, I represent to some degree who the guy is that goes adventure riding today. I had a dirt bike when I was 17, and then I went off to college and had a job and focused on my career, and suddenly I was in my 40s, and I hadn't ridden a motorcycle in 20-some-odd years. So I got the bug, and I signed up for a trip to go to Europe. And I rented a bike through a company called Beaches Motorcycle Adventures, and we went off for a wonderful two-week romp through the Alps, and I was riding the BMW GS on that ride. And I didn't know much about the bikes at the time, but I learned they're the Jeep, if you will, of the off-road world or the motorcycle world. And when I got back home, I was reflecting on how much fun I had had, and I was like, damn it, I would just love to somehow figure out how to make a career out of having fun instead of working for GE Medical Systems, which is what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And so one thing led to another, and I started Rawhide about 10 years later with the goal of taking people out into the boondocks. That's my passion. I like to get away from light pollution, noise pollution, other things, and just go out into the pristine part of our world that's unspoiled and beautiful and quiet at night, and you can see the stars. And a long story, but I digress. Where should we go from here, Ted?
this whole BMW thing. Now, how does that affect the riders that you guys train? I mean, do they get familiar with the BMWs right away because they are big bikes, or is there specific?
Well, so typically today, the largest number of people that are migrating toward the adventure bike space are coming off of cruisers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically the Harley world changing gears and wanting to do something new. And so we get guys coming into us. They're expressing nervousness and concern because bike weighs 600 pounds, and when you get off on a dirt road or you're riding in the gravel, everything feels squishy. You don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have that sense of certainty that you do when you're on the pavement. And you turn the handlebars just a little bit, you have an instantaneous reaction from the bike. Yeah. In the gravel, you turn the handlebars a little bit, and nothing really happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So we are, our basic shtick is helping people develop confidence to be able to take their bike wherever the hell they want to go.
Right. Of course. Well, in that mode while we're there, you've trained thousands of riders since you guys started. What's the common misconception to new adventure riders have when they first arrive at Rawhide?
You know, I think the biggest thing that people question is how long it's going to take to gain some level of proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of guys are like, oh shit, this is going to take months for me to get good at this. And surprisingly enough, you can learn an amazing amount in just 2 days. I have continually got people coming up to me, and it's just like they put a hand on my shoulder like, Jim, I had no idea I could get so much in just 2 days.
Wow.
And so I think that's the biggest, I don't want to call it a misconception, but I think that's a lot of people's concern. It's like, God, this is going to take forever for me to get good at this. And that's not true.
Right. Do you get people coming through that have some degree of knowledge of what they're up against?
Well, sure. I got guys from all walks of life with all levels of experience.
Oh, sure, you know,
I got lots of dirt bike guys who they've done motocross and they've done hare and hounds and things like this, and they're like, well, you know what? I just kind of feel like this bike weighs 400 pounds more than my dirt bike, and there's got to be some different techniques.
Yeah.
So we get some of those guys. We get the 300,000 mile street guys coming. So it's a very wide audience.
All right. Now, as far as it goes for some of your tours that you do with new riders, how do you prepare them for some of your tours, like, for example, Death Valley or the Continental Divide or similar southwestern.
Yeah, there's a vetting process there.
Oh, really?
If they haven't taken one of our training classes, then they have to demonstrate to me they've done similar things. Because when you're running an organized tour, the last thing you want is that guy who is completely inept and slowing everybody else down.
Right.
So we try real hard to make certain that everybody that takes our tours has some level of competency so that they're not going to be that guy. So if a guy says, yeah, Jim, sure, man, I've ridden like the Idaho BDR, the Nevada BDR, and the Utah BDR, I'm like, okay, you'll be fine.
Right.
I usually ask a few questions. Did you struggle much? How much did you drop your bike? You know, just to get some ideas. But if they've done things that I know, I'm like, fine. Otherwise, if they go, yeah, man, I got 200,000 miles on the street. I have never ridden off-road. I'm like, you got to take a class before we let you go.
So although it's not a prerequisite, it's advisable that you have some off-road training.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that are self-taught, and they've developed some bad habits that we would like them to break before they take trips with us.
Do you ever get any guys that come in there that have the knowledge and are possibly maybe more confident than they should be?
Oh, yeah. I had a lady working for me. She was like 5'3", and she could ride anything.
Right.
And I remember this one specific client. He came in and he was joking. He goes, hey, listen, I got a lot of experience. He says, I just came to see if you guys could humiliate me in any way. And Cheryl looked at him and she said, how quickly would you like that to happen? Because overconfidence is a male thing. You know, here's an epiphany I had, Ted.
Yeah.
There are a lot of men out there who, you know, their dads were very handy and gave them a lot of mechanical skills as they grew up. And I like to joke that some men just feel like they have a God-given gift to understand all things mechanical.
Right.
And they come in with that attitude and like, guy, come on, you got some things to learn. And they usually do, and they're usually gracious about it. But, yeah. You know, every now and then. Get that guy.
We have this saying in mountain biking. It says confidence, that feeling you get moments before you really understand the situation.
That's good. I might have to borrow that from you.
Unfortunately, I do fall into that category. I'll tell you what, let's talk about your adventure camps. You know, you got your training and immersive experience. Why don't you walk us through a typical day at one of your camps from breakfast to campfire?
All right. Well, so all of the training programs that we offer, our official BMW training programs,
right,
begin on a Friday afternoon. And the idea is just get people in case they've had a flight cancel or a delay. They, sure, at least they get here Friday before their experience is impacted. And so we do an orientation in our bar, and then we feed them dinner and we put them to bed. And then the next morning, you know, coffee's on at 6 a.m. Classes always start at 7:30. So they have, breakfast is at 7:30 and classes start at 9. So they get up, have some coffee. We have a beautiful, beautiful facility. We're 40 miles north of Los Angeles, up in the mountains. You really don't, you can't see any ambient light or anything. So guys just get up, have some coffee, enjoy the view because we're sitting up on a hilltop with mm-hmm. views down the canyons and whatnot. And then they have a nice breakfast. Speaking of food, the thing that I think the surprise and delight, if you will, of coming here is that our chef is a legit chef. He's not
really?
some guy that we hired from Denny's that knows how to fry cook a chicken breast. Our chefs all have culinary arts degrees. A lot of them, we have several, two or three of them are cordon bleu. Which,
oh, really? Ooh.
For foodies, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So the level of cuisine that we offer is way more than most people expect. So anyway, again, I digress. Breakfast is at 7:30. They've then got an hour and a half to get ready for their class session. Depending on whether they're picking level 1, 2, or 3, We have morning meetings. We talk about the day. And then we always do some stretching because a lot of guys, especially the gray-haired crowd, they're stiff. So they need to limber up a little before.
Really?
Believe it or not. It's nothing rigorous. It's not like calisthenics in the Army, but we stretch about a little bit before they get on the bike so they don't pull a muscle. And then their day begins. So they usually get about 3 hours of ride time after breakfast. Then we have lunch, another 4 to 4.5 hours of ride time, drills, explanations, et cetera, in the afternoon. And then it's 5 o'clock somewhere, time for a beer. Couple hours doing happy hour. We have appetizers, and then they have dinner. We actually have a small spa here on site where we bring a masseuse in every Saturday and Sunday night. So if the guys want to get a massage, they can. And then they get a good night's sleep. And on Sunday, it's pretty much rinse and repeat, same drill, same schedule, other than more exercises and drills.
Wow. So this is actually all, this is all bike time. There's no classroom stuff here.
We have on Saturday morning, there is one for the people that come for the introductory level, the level one class. There's about a 40-minute lecture, call it classroom time. And other than that, it's all on the bike.
And I assume that all of the bikes you have are all BMWs.
That would be correct.
Okay. Now, what's the smallest one you use for your training?
The smallest thing that we currently have is a BMW 750.
And do you use that for the training, or do you guys just whatever's available?
So we've got almost 60 bikes.
Really? Wow.
But the bulk of them are the new 1300s.
Really?
Because the bigger the bike, the heavier the bike, the more people feel the need for a little education. Yeah, the smaller bikes don't get rented a lot because most of the folks that come here have bought a 1300 or a 1250 or whatever.
Right.
So the bigger, heavier boxer motor bikes.
Wow. See, I would think that, you know, because fully loaded, those things get pretty heavy, right?
They're 570 pounds wet. So that means with a tank of gas, but no luggage. No. 570 pounds.
So now you add all your luggage and everything else you need, and you're sitting probably around 800-900 pounds, right?
Probably not that much.
All right.
Usually 50 pounds in each saddlebag, so that's 670. An extra 10 pounds in a tank bag. So, you know, 700 pounds, I would say.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Kind of at the max. But then you put the weight of the rider on there, another 200 pounds. So.
Yeah.
You got 900 pounds of mass moving around.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a tad. Hey, so I understand you guys offering a ladies-only training course.
We have not had the best success with that.
Really?
And it's very interesting. And I hope I don't offend any of the lady listeners, but I don't think I will. We've done a couple ladies-only classes. And I've learned something very interesting, and that is that the gals who feel the need to be surrounded by other women so that there's no, no male energy,
right,
let's say, don't do as well collectively as women who, think about this. The motorcycle industry is still 90% male.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So any gal who is, let's just say, ballsy enough to sign up for a training class, knowing that there's going to be a bunch of guys there, she's got a different outlook. And they do exceptionally well.
Oh, really?
And we have found that the ladies who kind of need the female energy around them struggle more because they feel like this is, I can't honestly put much of a defining, because I'm not a girl, but I've noticed that we have a lot more trouble when we have a group of women that need to be around female energy. It just doesn't work as well. But you get a gal that just signs up and takes a class with the boys, their mindset is different. So whatever it's worth, but we keep once a year we offer a ladies only training class, but we haven't had the best of luck filling them out.
Wow. Oh, that's something. How many people do you usually get in any class that you have?
Class sizes range from 18 to 25.
Really? Ooh, that's good. And I guess everybody comes from all over the place.
We've got a ton of international business. We get 50% of our business is from the Mississippi River to the West Coast.
Wow.
But the other half of our business is global. Some East Coast, some Florida. Brits, we have quite a few British. We've got a strong contingent of Russian clients.
Really?
Long story there, but the girl that does our website, her cousin is the president of the BMW Club of Russia.
Oh, wow. So, that's something.
So we've made a connection there. But we get people from all over the place.
Wow. Now, you got facilities in California and in Colorado. Now, you got four?
We got four different facilities.
Okay, so where are they now? California, Colorado, where else?
Our main facility is here in Southern California.
Okay.
And we have two other locations in California.
Okay.
So we have a place that we call Zakar, which is 100 acres right out in the very center of the Mojave Desert, which is one of the biggest off-road playgrounds in America. Then we have a little satellite facility right at the edge of Death Valley National Park.
Ooh.
And then we've got 120-acre facility up in Colorado.
Wow. Now, how does the different landscapes and challenged, does that differ between all the locations?
The Mojave Desert will introduce you to the wonderful world of sand.
We like sand.
You know, everybody loves to hate sand. Our Southern Cal facility, there's an old phrase, I'd rather be lucky than smart any day. My parents bought this place in 1945.
Wow.
So we have what we call Rawhide Ranch. I have got every single thing that I need to effectively train people for any form of off-road travel.
Right.
We have gentle hills, steep hills. We've got sand. We've got ravines. We've got big flat areas where we can set up our cone exercises and whatnot. Then for the Zakar facility in the desert, that's trail riding and sand. And then up in Colorado, Colorado is probably one of the most beautiful places in the world to ride motorcycles.
Not bad, man.
The Rocky Mountains, we're located in Park County, which Park County has the greatest amount of dirt roads of any of the counties in the state of Colorado.
Wow, so, all right.
Our facility there is 13 miles in on the Continental Divide Trail, and we are situated right on the CDR Trail, and it's a long, rocky dirt road to get into our place. So,
wow.
Sometimes we tease people when they arrive. We're saying, "Hey, you graduated. Welcome to Rawhide. You just graduated.
You're here."
You're here. You made it here.
Sounds like a boatload of fun. Oh man, let's talk about some of your tours now.
Okay.
Now you guys, you have tours in remote areas in both North and South America and Europe. Why don't you tell us about some of those?
Oh gosh, well, we just branched into Europe a couple of years ago. And Europe doesn't have anywhere near the off-road dirt riding that that North and South America do.
Really?
And so mostly Central Europe, there's no off-road. There's
okay.
Just Germany, Switzerland, Austria. There is the only dirt that you could ride on would be with permission from a farmer to ride the dirt road out to his field or something.
Oh, no kidding.
Northern Italy has some, France has some, Spain has some, but mostly the European things that we're offering are just simply for the experience of seeing the countries.
Right.
Okay. Mostly pavement, any dirt we can find here or there. We just did our first tour of Scandinavia, Norway and Sweden this last summer.
That must have been awesome.
We managed to find maybe 100 miles of dirt roads on a 15-day tour.
Wow.
I got to tell you, from the standpoint of adventure, North and South America really, for us, that's our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We do a lot here In North America, we do several of the BDRs. We do the Continental Divide, which to me is the greatest adventure ride in our country.
Really? No kidding.
Well, we start in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and head north to Helena, Montana, which is the capital of Montana. And really, this began 20-some-odd years ago when the American Mountain Bike Association...
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Yep. They created a mountain bike trail
yep.
that went from the Mexican border to the Canadian border.
Yep.
And over the years, the motorcycle community gravitated toward that. But some of the stuff they do on mountain bikes is not really suitable nor appropriate for bikes.
Yeah.
So, but there's a whole lot of it that is. And so we got the American Mountain Bike tracks, and we figured out where bikes could go and where they shouldn't go. And we created a route that goes from Albuquerque to Helena, pretty much down the spine of the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
There's some of the most beautiful landscapes that our country has to offer.
Yeah. Wow.
So I would say that's our number one adventure here.
No way. Is it really?
Yeah.
That's the most popular one. Okay. Now, how long is that trip?
It's the most popular. It's just the best. The reason is it's only open a couple of months.
Yeah.
You can't. Winter months potentially late August all the way through July 4th, it's impassable because of snow in certain areas.
Really? July 4th? Impassable?
Some of the big mountain passes in Colorado don't open till July 4th weekend.
Wow.
The counties sometimes if they're still clogged, the counties will plow them with dozers in preparation for the July 4th weekend, because that brings... July 4th brings a lot of money into the backcountry of Colorado.
Yeah, I bet.
So, there are several passes. Hagerman Pass is one of the big ones that we use. It's never open before July 4th.
Jeez. Wow.
So you got about a 2-month window to do the Continental Divide. We do it twice. We do one up and one back.
Yeah. Damn. So I guess there's no sense in me asking which one is your favorite, because I think I know
that. That is totally my favorite.
Yeah.
But we do a couple trips into Mexico, although we had to pause that because the State Department has just put a level 3 threat warning up for Americans in Mexico.
Boy.
And that is retribution by the cartels for our current president's focus on immigrants and all. There's actually a bounty up to $50,000 on ICE agents.
Yes, I heard that. Yes.
So I'm like, as a business, it's not a good idea for us to take paying clients into Mexico, because the warning on the State Department website is that if you display affluence, you are a target.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yep. And so riding into town on a $30,000 motorcycle is
affluence?
Kind of a maybe, you think?
Maybe.
So we decided... to pause Mexico for a few months until we see what happens. Yeah. But South America, you mentioned South America.
How is South America?
Dude, it's unbelievable. To my two favorite countries down there, well, three, Chile, Argentina, and Bolivia.
Really?
Chile and Argentina are the home of Patagonia.
Yes.
Okay? Everybody's heard about Patagonia, even if it's only from the clothing line. But an epiphany that I had a few years ago is that, think about this, Ted. When you travel, you take a vacation. Let's say you go to Paris, London, or Rome. In one way or another, you're going there to see the handiwork of man, right?
Yeah.
You go to Paris, it's maybe the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre, the museums. You go to Rome to see the antiquities. Go to England, maybe, because we have a heritage there, but there's the crown jewels and Big Ben and all these other things. If you go to Patagonia, there is nothing remarkable that mankind has done down there. What you see there, if you take it in the context I offer, it's the handiwork of God.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a religious statement. That's what planet Earth used to look like before mankind came along and started reshaping things.
Yeah, exactly.
Patagonia is hundreds, thousands of miles of raw natural beauty.
Yeah.
With little towns and villages scattered here or there, but there are times as we do our Patagonia tours, we'll ride all day and not see another car.
Wow.
You know, we know where the gas stops are. There is gas, but it's just the population density down in Patagonia is like one person for every 15 square miles or something.
That's
like
amazing.
That.
Oh, yeah. That must be awesome.
It's spectacular.
That must be amazing.
Just freaking amazing.
And you hit some pretty high mountains down there too.
Well, Patagonia, you're on the southern dwindling edge of the Andes. Northern Argentina and Bolivia, you're riding up in what they call the Altiplano. Mm-hmm. And the lowest point is 13,000.
You can't really breathe there.
If you drop your bike, you'll need to take a moment and catch your breath just from picking it up.
It's gonna lay there for a while.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was doing some mountain biking out in Moab, and we were up at one of these passes, and we were at nearly 11,000 feet, and. What I discovered being at that kind of altitude is walking around is nothing. You know, it's fine, it's good. But the moment you exert yourself, there is no air.
No, there's not, man. You're huffing and puffing.
Yeah, just a little. Oh, jeez. Oh, as far as it goes, how do you scout these routes out for these trips down to South America or just generally anywhere? How do you scout these?
Here in the U.S., usually I don't ride alone. So if I'm scouting, I have a four-wheel drive truck, and I'll take my laptop and my GPS, and I'll scout the routes in a 4x4.
There you go.
In South America and the other countries that we're operating in, I have partners.
Okay.
And in South America, for example, it's actually a funny story how we got started in South America. The Dakar Rally. For a few years, ran in South America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the year after Al-Qaeda targeted the Dakar when it was running out of France, a delegation from Chile and Argentina went to the organizer that did the Dakar and said, hey, look, you know, we know that the Dakar is a desert race, and we got a really big desert in South America.
Yes, you do.
And here's what a lot of people didn't know. The organizer of the Dakar was paying a few million dollars to the governments of Mauritania, Morocco, Senegal, etc., for military protection.
Oh my God!
While the event was moving through those countries, and they also needed logistical help, and sometimes the military of Mauritania or Morocco would use their helicopters to move things around.
Right.
Well, the Argentinians and the Chileans got together and they came to the organizers and said, listen, here's the deal. If you bring your event to South America, we will provide you free military support, free police support, and we'll pay you $10 million on top of that.
Wow.
Each company contributed $5 million. So, gosh, I don't know how long the guy had to think about that, but wait, let me see. I'll make an extra $10 million and get free help.
Yeah, that's it. Sign me up.
Yeah, so they moved the Dakar to South America, and I was just sitting at my desk one day, and I got an email from some guy down there, and he goes, "Mr. Hyde, I've heard about your company, and we have a tour business in South America, and we would love to work with you if you thought you might be able to bring people to us to see the Dakar Rally."
Yeah.
I was like, pretty. I was kind of busy. I'm like, man, I don't know who you are. You know, I got other things to do. So a month or two later, same guy sends me the same email, a copy paste. And I had a little bit more time that day. And I'm like, Dakar. So I thought about it. I sent the guy back a note. So I'm like, look, dude, I don't know who you are. You're 8,000 miles away from me. Do you have any references in the U.S. that could vouch for you? And it turned out he did.
Wow.
So I checked a few references and I sent him back a note. I'm like, well, I would be interested in some form of collaboration I said, do you have a way we can get bikes? You know, I mean, if we're going to follow the car rally, we're going to need bikes. He gets, oh, yes, we know a local rental company. I'm like, okay. So we started planning. And in 2010, I put together a group of riders to go down and ride along with the Dakar.
Oh, cool.
But here's the interesting part.
Yeah.
We took me and this guy, his name is Nacho. Okay. Nacho. Me and Nacho, we established a price for what this tour would cost.
Right.
And I collected money from our clients. And then Nacho sends me a note. He's like, Jim, I have to pay for the hotels. I got to pay for the rental bikes. He said, you need to wire me $50,000.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, we had charged our clients about, I don't know, 10 grand a piece. I had 10 customers. So there's $100,000 on the table. He goes, but I need some of this money in advance. I got to pay for the hotels. Like, the rental guy doesn't know who I am, really. He wants to be paid in advance. So I'm like, well, okay, your reference is checked out. So I wired him 50 grand. And then I didn't hear back from him for a week or so.
Uh-oh.
But then I did, and he told me that this is organized, that's organized. But so I got all my customers on the same flight to Buenos Aires. And then we had to transfer to a little town called Mendoza. And as we were getting off the plane, walking to our baggage claim in Mendoza, Argentina, I said to the guys, guys, listen, I hope that there's somebody out there, once we get our bags, that has my name on a placard.
Oh, no.
Because if there's nobody there to greet us, it's going to take me a little while to pay you all back.
Wow.
So, but you know what? We walked out of baggage claim, and there was this cute little girl that was the secretary of our partner there, and my name was on a plaque, and I'm like, whew.
Yeah, really?
It's going to work. So, but you know what? They keep reminding me of that and thanking me for the trust that I placed in them. We've now had a partnership with them for 15 years.
That's
taking
great.
People to South America. So bottom line is that Nacho does all the scouting. He puts together and he does all the logistics. He plans the hotels, gets all the organization done.
Yeah.
And I do the marketing. He does the logistics, and we bring our clients down there. He does a wonderful job, and
wow.
People have life-changing adventures with us, especially in Patagonia, and
yeah.
A trip that we call the ABC Tour, Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile.
Wow. How long is the each of those tours? Like,
15 days.
They're 15 days each. Wow.
Each is 15 days with a flight and arrival day on each end at minimum. So 17 days at minimum, and we always encourage people to try to get in country a couple days early.
No kidding, yeah.
You're on the other side.
Well, what's included with that? Somebody buys into one, wants to take one of these tours. What's included?
All right, so pretty much everything except for fuel and alcohol.
Okay.
So, and flights. So they gotta get an airline ticket. Then they fly down there. We will pick them up at the airport, transfer them to the first hotel. All meals are included, breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. A base model motorcycle is included, which is typically a BMW 650, 700 okay. style bike. If they want to upgrade to larger bikes, that's a possibility. There are a couple of we have a little excursion package that we offer. They can either take it or not, because there are some side trips along the way that they could take if they want. Otherwise, at the end of the day, we just go to the hotel.
Okay.
But yeah, pretty much everything's included except for booze and gas.
Oh, so everybody's got to pay for their own fuel. Oh, that's cool. All right.
They got to pay for their own fuel, because if they don't, it's like you get 16, 18 bikes in a row filling up one at a time at a pump. It just kills too much time.
So
we're like, guys, we're pulling to the gas station. There's six pumps. Everybody hit a pump. We kind of urge people to form little fuel groups.
Yeah.
Like two or three guys together. This guy pays the first time, that guy pays the second time.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, because here's the honest truth, Ted, some guys are throttle jockeys and they just like to ride at 5,000 RPM, so they've got better throttle response and they burn through gas way faster than the guys who are just cruising. So it's like, guys, you're on your own for gas.
Wow. That sounds like a really an awesome trip. 15 days, 17 days. That's an awesome trip. Wow.
Jeez. Yes, it is.
Wow, yeah.
It's my favorite ride. Everything we do.
Well, tell us about some of the events that Rawhide hosts each year.
Yeah, we do two or three different things. Our main event is called Adventure Days. And a lot of guys also go to these, Overland Expo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we've tried to sort of make a copycat event where Adventure Days takes place at one of our three facilities.
Okay.
And we get vendors and educators in. It's a low-cost event. We typically charge less than $500 for 3 days, including all their meals, rides, etc.
Oh, nice.
But we try to make it an educational event. So right. There's clinics and classes on a wide variety of topics, everything from you know, higher level utilization of a GPS to satellite communications,
right,
to basic riding clinics, packing clinics, how to winch, how to tow up one bike to another. Let's say you and your buddy are out, he burns out his clutch and you're 25 miles out in the middle of nowhere. Rather than wait all day for a backcountry tow truck that's going to cost $1,500,
mm-hmm,
hook a tow strap on and tow your buddy out. You know, so we offer lots and lots of educational classes, as well as just the chance to meet some new people, have some fun. You know, you get 250, 300 people all that enjoy the same thing and you know, hanging out and camping together, and we have live music at night. Just, it's a fun fest.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
Now, one thing I did want to ask you about, as far as it goes for your tours and even your training, are people allowed to bring their own bike if they want to?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course. I have always said that every bike has a little bit of its own personality.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so if you're comfortable doing our tours and you want to bring your own bike, you will have a better experience on your bike than on a rental.
Mm-hmm. It's just that you have to pay for the transportation of it.
Yeah, and or you got to take however much extra time off work.
Exactly.
To get there and get home. So for a lot of folks, time is more precious than money. So we rent bikes and they can just fly in and save a boatload of time.
Yeah.
So
excellent. Now, how can people learn more about Rawhide Adventures?
Well, they could follow us on Instagram or Facebook.
Okay.
We have a big presence on each. We're easy to find. Just search Rawhide Adventures. They can go to our website, which is real simple. It's rawhide-offroad.com.
Yeah, it's a very nice website, by the way.
Thank you. And we have a big YouTube channel. So they can get search for Rawhide Adventures on YouTube, and we've got 150 videos up, including some movies that we filmed. So there's a ton of content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Or they can call us. Should I give them the phone number?
Oh, we can. You can do that. I'm going to put it in the show notes anyway.
Okay, fine. Just put them in the show notes.
I'll
give us a call, go to our website, follow us on social media, or check us out on YouTube. Plenty of ways to learn what we do.
Excellent. Now, any closing words for someone who's on the fence about signing up? What's one thing you'd say to convince them that Rawhide is more than just a riding school and a touring company?
Wow.
That's a lot. I know. I'm sorry.
Well, I would say, number one, education is the single most valuable thing that you can do to improve your enjoyment of your ride, period, end of subject.
Yeah.
Why Rawhide? Sounds a little cocky, but I'll stand behind it. We have more to offer the person who's interested in what we call adventure riding than any other country in the United States.
Yeah.
We have more facilities. We have the largest rental fleet of any company in our space. We're the only company that has the range of hospitality services that we offer. We've been doing it for 22 years, and we're the only company in America that was good enough to catch BMW's attention. Right. That's something we're very proud of. So, BMW's the, I think they're the eighth most recognized brand in the world, and they're very, very picky about their partners.
I bet.
They did a lot of due diligence before they gave us the nod. So if something like that brings us credibility, then yay. Otherwise, I'll just say we offer more than anybody. And please check it out. Verify for yourself.
All right. Excellent. Jim, listen, I want to thank you very much for being on the podcast. You've been a wealth of information, very great stuff, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you much for talking to us about this stuff.
Well, like I said when we first opened, thank you for the invitation. I really enjoyed the opportunity to chat with you, and well,
thank you very
much. See how the Motorcycle Men of America like
us. Excellent. All right, Jim, thank you very much for being on the show. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done, and thank you again.
The Motorcycle Men Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be a part of something that actually makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will be in the show notes. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those left behind. If you would like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Thanks for joining me and Jim Hyde here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us about Rawhide Adventures. Now, you can learn more about Rawhide Adventures by getting over to rawhideoffroad.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you would please also like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. Hey, you can get your copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled, now direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website and save nearly $8. Of course, it's still available on Amazon and the audiobook on Audible. You can get it from me if you want, and I can even sign it for you if you'd like. All right, kids, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely, kids.